Before I begin this poem, I'd...
Yeah, hello? Yeah, go on. Sorry about that.
And when the brother didn't mention her, when she was running, he only clarified Hillary as being the only woman to break the ceiling and run for president. I already knew who he was. So, but sometimes, Democrats get so glassy-eyed, they forget. You gotta appreciate Tea Party for one thing, even though they're ignorant to, they're working against their self, but they go into something and they get it. And the Democratic Party usually just goes and they hope that the person does it. They don't push forward, they slack. And I think that as a black Democrat, now I'm an independent, I feel like all those years I was a Democrat, there was no agenda being made in my community. And if anything, we were working against our own interest. I'm not saying that, if you can't, like one thing that Bush once said, he said, you're in a party that's not doing anything for you.
Well, just digging up some music underneath. This is my hit of the week. It's by Low Key, and no, I'm not talking about a Nordic demigod, but rather Lowkey, British Iraqi heritage poet of great passion and wonderful music. I'm doing that because we have only a minute or so left.
Oh, sorry about that.
Yeah, would you call me next week? I like your conversation.
All right, next week.
Okay, thank you so much. This is Earthwatch. You all, every one of you has been a beautiful, beautiful caller. Thank you. Thank you so much. Drop a note to Earthwatch, WBAI, 120 Wall Street, New York, 10005. Drop an email to rknight@wbai.org.
Strip was getting bomb, Obama didn't say bitch. OBAMA, you ain't fooling everyone. I see the games you play. You was VIP at the BIC, and we know that's a code name for CIA. The same way your cameras are watching us, we're watching you. Think we're easy to control, you ain't got a clue. Revolution's on the way, let's see what you're gonna do. You're gonna send the troops, you're gonna drop the nukes. See, it's not where you're from, it's where you're at. He's sitting in the White House, so who cares if he's black? And why is there soldiers still out there in the back? Natural resources ain't yours, it's theirs, give it back. You're just another puppet, but I'm not surprised. Look at Colin Powell and Condoleezza Rice. They didn't change ish. House niggas fresh off the slave ship. You all burn in hell, even Michelle Obama nation. Gaza Strip was getting bomb, Obama didn't say shit.
You're the bigger threat from Osama or from Obama. Military bases from Chagos to Okinawa. I say things that other rappers won't say, cause my mind never closed like Guantanamo Bay. Hope you didn't build a statue or tattoo your arm, cause the drones are still flying over Pashtunistan. Did he defend the war? He extended more, even had the time to attempt a coup in Ecuador. Morales and Chavez, the states are on a hunt for ya. Military now stationed on bases in Colombia. Take a trip to the past and tell him I was right. Ask Ali Abu Nima and Jeremiah Wright. Drones over Pakistan, Yemen and Libya. Is Obama the bomber getting ready for Syria? First black president, the masses were hungry, but the same president just bombed an African country like...
The Jonas Brothers are here. They're out there somewhere. Sasha and Malia are huge fans.
Earthwatch was brought to you with portions on recording. Good morning. This is Hour of the Wolf, a Wednesday night program dedicated to science fiction, fantasy, enchantment, and the imagination. My name is Jim Freund. Tonight, Kay Tempest Bradford is here for a dramatic reading of Until Forgiveness Comes. Stay tuned. It's just going straight into the sound effects. Okay, so you can consider that but a preview of what we're going to be doing shortly. Okay, this player should not be playing stuff until I tell it to. Well, that's going to be a problem again, isn't it? I should do what we did at ReaderCon, which is one instant for each effect, one version of VLC.
Yeah, probably.
For every effect. Let me turn on your microphone. Say that again.
Yes, probably.
Oh, okay. Much better.
There
much
we go.
Better. Yeah, you could. So, let us explain. First of all, this is a story that was first read on The Ord.
That's right.
Hour of the Wolf on Saturday morning at 5 a.m. as part of an Altered Fluid show, was it not?
No. It was my first solo show with you.
Ah, okay.
That's right.
It was. Okay, very good. And the moment that Tempest read it, I said, you know, that thing is, it's about radio.
Mm-hmm.
It needs to be radio. And we thought at the time that it would be a good thing to broadcast about the time of September 11th. Mm-hmm. Not because it's not a September 11th story, although would you say it's inspired by?
It is inspired by my reaction to September 11th.
And what occurred, yeah.
Yeah.
But it's not in the same way as the broadcast we did on Sunday, mm-hmm. the Rick Bowes story, which can still be heard on the stream, by the way, at archive.w. No, go to ourwolf.com.
Yeah.
Go to my site, HOURWOLF.com, and there's a link there that says listen to the show, and there's a link directly to Rick Bowes' There's a Hole in the City.
Mm-hmm. And which is an amazing story.
It's a good one. It's a good one. It really is. And I thought it would make a great double feature with this. But we have had, we without much discussion, Tempest and I immediately said, Andrea Hairston.
Yes.
You know, which is great. Next time, we should choose a director within 100 miles of us. except that for Andrea Hairston, you wait. Because she's so... I know you're going to use the A word, aren't you?
I've been told not to use the A word so much. But she is...
You can go British and say brilliant.
She is brilliant.
She's also awesome. I'll use the A word. We have to let know people what the A word really was, you see. can't leave them hanging. And she's amazing. She teaches theater. The Chrysalis Theater Company, which she has with Pan Morgan, who is equally amazing.
Mm-hmm.
And all that. But we had so many problems. There was one point when Andrea was going to come to town to do a New York Review of Science Fiction reading in February. Mm-hmm. And then we had to cancel that reading.
For epic snow.
The problem was is that we were actually okay over here. The snow didn't happen in New York.
Right.
But where...
I mean, it was pretty bad, but it was worse up in Massachusetts.
In Massachusetts, she was iced. In.
They were shoveling snow been, off the roof.
There had been snow, then there was rain.
Yeah.
Then it got freezing cold again. So you had ice over snow. You had black iced roads all the way from there to New York. And simply they were saying, stay off the road.
Right.
And she had to. And then something else happened in March. I don't even recall what, but it wasn't the time. And there were BAI problems with that. That's a whole other story that actually has been taken care of and are moot today.
Yes.
And then Andrea came back in August, but she had to schedule a round trip. So
yes.
We're still waiting on making the radio drama happen in July, now at ReaderCon.
Yes. We did a dramatic preview. It was a dramatic reading, and actually it was really wonderful because Andrea was there, Pan was there, and we also had the luck to have two radio drama, you know, veterans there, Ellen Kushner and Mary Robinette Kowal, who are also science fiction and fantasy writers. So we did a version of the story there, and it was just really wonderful.
I was there too.
Oh well, of course, Jim had to be there.
But I did the sound effects.
He did the sound effects, and he did the news anchor. But it was the first time that I really got an inkling of what the finished product would be like, and having amazing actresses there to do the parts was just really wonderful. And there was at one point where Ellen Kushner's performance nearly made me cry.
Yeah.
In the middle of the
whole
thing.
And she was cold.
Yes.
She had just
seen the script for like 5 minutes before we started.
She arrived at the con about half an hour before.
Yep. And she did
she
a really
Delia.
Good job.
Yeah.
It was
Oh, and Andrea and Andrea arrived like even later.
Yeah. So it was mostly it was just, you know, it wasn't meant to be a polished thing, but it turned out extremely well. And was pretty wonderful. So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I've heard nothing but good things from the people who actually were there. Mm-hmm. Could you do me a favor? Could you close that door? Pull out that mic stand away And we'll actually, this room, by the way, that we are broadcasting out of is probably about 99.5 degrees. Okay, you know, we are, not only are we matching our frequency, but we're in the temperate zone. This play, it's like, okay, the summer is over, but let's not forget how horrible it was. Let's make the temperature in the control room unbearable. We will open all the doors and let all the sound come in after the reading.
Yes.
Which runs.
And I have a fan, so I'm
yeah,
set.
I should have brought one. I should have brought one of Mary Robinette Kowal's fans.
Yes.
Because she was her Milk and Honey book. What's the full
Shades title? Of Milk and Honey.
Thank you. Shades of Milk and Honey by Mary Robinette Kowal, K-O-W-A-L. She gave out these sandalwood fans, mm-hmm. although the one you have isn't sandalwood at all. It's
it is plastic and polyester, I think.
Yeah, but it emulates silk.
Yes.
And it's nice.
It is nice.
So I think the thing to do... I'm not getting the different effect. I'm just going to cue them.
Okay.
As they come along separately. And so let me actually... Yeah, my mic will be there. The effects will be right there.
Awesome.
I'm just going to have to pop down and pot up and bring them up one by one. And understand that the next time you hear this will be a full-fledged radio drama.
Yes.
I mean, that will happen eventually. Exactly how, Tempest and I will figure out.
Yeah, we will. We'll figure it out.
Yeah, we'll figure it out. But I don't see any liquid, and you're going to be doing all the reading.
I'm usually okay. I had a lot of liquid before
okay,
I came.
Because you could talk for a while, and I could fetch you a glass of water. I'm serious.
Okay.
Okay, do that.
Well, just to give
read that. No, don't read that.
Oh,
list.
I'm not supposed to
that's
read the seven
Carlin
words.
List. Don't read the Carlin
I won't read the seven words list. But I'll give a little bit of a background on this story. It's called Until Forgiveness Comes. It was originally published at strangehorizons.com, which is a speculative fiction magazine for those of you who have not read it, and really wonderful stories on there every week, so I would definitely recommend it. So it was 2005, I believe, or maybe 2006 when this story was first published, and it was originally written in the form of what an NPR piece looks like when you actually look at it online. So it doesn't have necessarily script elements to it where it says, you know, news anchor says this and such another person says that, but I basically patterned it after what NPR reports look like when they go online, because I wanted to evoke, you know, this as an NPR piece, because NPR is what inspired me to write this. Thank you. It was listening to NPR reports about 9/11 on an anniversary back in 2005, I believe, that inspired me to write this story. So,
I think it was published in, like, February of 2006 online.
Okay.
As I recall, but
yeah.
Not certain of that.
It was around that time.
Yeah.
About then.
So, okay, one second. I have to tame this blessed computer.
Blessed.
I couldn't come up with the appropriate term without going to the Carlin list.
All computers are blessed.
Yes, well, this particular one, anytime I go to the player, is showing me a Windows Hourglass, which
of
is
course.
Not what you want to see.
No one wants the hourglass.
On the machine.
No. That's not what you want to see. But, you know, it's radio. It's all happening live. It's like a reality show happening right in front of us.
Well, there's radio and then there's WBAI New York. So, should we proceed?
We should proceed.
Alrighty. So, why don't you give it the name and byline?
All right. This is Until Forgiveness Comes by K. Tempest Bradford.
Let's all start. Let's try that again, okay? How embarrassing. Okay.
Reality
you
show.
See this? Yeah, it's a reality show. The player. is it's very proactive. And it wants to do what it wants to do. Alrighty. The title again?
Until Forgiveness Comes by K. Tempest Bradford.
Today is the 12th anniversary of the Red Sitesh Day bombings, and the commemoration of this seminal event in Kemetian history has once again sparked the debate on whether further high Thai rituals should be performed. Sylvia Aloli attended this morning's ritual in New Central Terminal and filed this report.
The ceremony started at exactly 6 o'clock this morning when the clerics of Ampu, Iset, Seker and Nebetet stood at the four corners to create the sanctified square. Inside New Central Terminal, families and participants listened to the invocations and chants on loudspeakers while frankincense-infused smoke hovered over the still and silent mourners. Once the square was established, Sadhana Manu, undercleric of Aset, gave the sign for mourners to station themselves near the main blast sites for their glimpses of loved ones long gone. The square is cast. Iset is with us. The square is cast. Nebetet stands by us. The square is cast. Ampu will guide us. The square is cast. Seker waits for us. In the 12 years since Red Sitesh Day, the clerics have perfected the high Thai ritual to the point where participants know the script by heart and no longer need much direction on where to go and when. Still, Sadhana manages a rotating roster of family members and survivors, reminding them of the correct verses to chant while invoking the highlights of that tragic day. Iset, our mother, Nebetet, our mother, for you, the door opens both ways. Every year, she stands on the memorial dais at the center of the main concourse, marking the time for prayers and the time for reading the names of the dead. Even if she weren't an officiant, Sadhana says she would find some way to participate. Having something to do gets me through the day every year. It's my way of honoring Beke. She lost her partner of 4 years that morning. Both seminary students at the time, they were planning to spend their lives serving Iset together. Bekeshe was on her way back to Nubia to spend time with family before her acoliteship began. Every year, Sadhana watches a faint trace of her stride across the concourse with her bags, searching for the train to the airport, just as the bombing began. Though the day is painful, Sadhana feels that her dual role as mourner and officiant has helped her minister to the families over the years. I know exactly how everyone feels. We all lost someone we loved, had them ripped away by hate. We share a bond. She helps 11-year-old Marcus Kichiakak up on the dais. This is his first year as a reader, though he has attended every anniversary I tie. His mother, Dasima, was 8 months pregnant the day her husband Titus died on his way into work. Marcus has only seen his father's face in pictures and on the anniversaries when Titus's ghost returns to relive those final moments. My mom brought me to the station each time, but I didn't get to go down to the platform until I was 7 and told her I was ready. Titus Nutau died next to train number 710 that morning. He was in the car with bomber number 1, who waited until the train came to a full stop before setting off the explosives strapped to his body. Several passengers in the car were blown out onto the platforms, and that is where Marcus has watched his father struggle for breath and expire every year for 5 years. It's hard to watch, but at least I get to see him this way. Sadhana chimes a bell at 7:07, and then 30 seconds later to mark the first 2 bomb blasts, both from trains arriving in the station. One long, silent minute later, a third bell signals the moment when bomber number 3 detonated in the middle of a large, confused crowd of commuters on the concourse. Most family members stand on the balconies above the main floor. Even from a distance, the invocation of this moment stirs feelings of claustrophobia. The entire hall, filled with faint, translucent shades of the dead, suddenly feels crowded as the ghosts snap into focus. Panic erupts as some are thrown several feet through the air while others, dying from their injuries, scramble to escape. Many victims were trampled or trapped by falling debris. That moment is very hard. Amelia Nabibi lost her sister to the chaos that Bomber No. 3 unleashed. The first year, you didn't really get a sense of it. They had these platforms we could stand on in the middle of the excavation, but you couldn't follow people the way you can now. When the reconstruction was finally done and we did the invocation, people nearly panicked when it happened. The immediacy of that moment never goes away, even though you know you're not in danger. I used to feel sort of bitter about the people who didn't stop to help the injured and basically stepped on them to get out. After that ritual, I understood. It was hard not to bolt myself. Sadana leads a group of incense-bearing acolytes downstairs, where Hannah Daughter Frida and J.C. Granger stand on opposite ends of the dining concourse and ring bells simultaneously to mark the point when bombers number 4 and 5 blew themselves up on the main stairways, killing dozens instantly and trapping hundreds more. This is my last year, I think. I've seen this too many times. I don't want to see again. When asked why she came this year, Hannah Daughter says she did it for her mother. I promised her before she died that I would come. She knew, because of the cancer, she would not make it this time. It was important to her, so I am here. Hannah Daughter is one of the few who didn't have to wait for the anniversaries to see the details of her father's death. His video camera was recovered from the rubble 2 days after the attack. The original tape showed Bomber No. 5 blocking the stairwell and a view from the floor of the aftermath. The archive version, with the bomber's face and name removed, is now part of the Red Seteshte Memorial. I ask my mother every year why we come. We had seen his last moment. He even spoke to us in the camera. He said he loved us. I want to honor him, but maybe this is not the way. Others have also raised concerns over the ongoing nature of the Haitai ritual. Though performing it after the first or second anniversary isn't unheard of, most clerics don't recommend it. Wasirian cleric Anes Mashai is an outspoken opponent of further Red Seteshte Haitai. Bringing closure and allowing family members to say goodbye is healthy, especially in the case of such a massive disaster. But reliving and recreating the event over and over again every year may be keeping them from moving on. Anes works closely with Belle Lucan of the Interfaith Coalition to quell the violence that inevitably arises as the anniversary approaches. Doing this ritual every year, long after the event, is like ripping a scab off a wound so it can't heal. It's not just the families either. 12 cities from here to Kemet to Britannia effectively stand still on this day, and the anger comes fresh again and again. Lucan says a year has not gone by without a member of his congregation reporting an altercation, or worse. People don't understand the difference between Pays and Belnos cultists and the average Auvergne. Everyone in Auvergne shares a desire to have Gergovie under sovereign rule, but the majority is against the use of violence to achieve that end. Anes agrees that the ritual is what sparks the fresh wave of conflicts rather than the anniversary itself. Of course, we should never forget those who died and why they're gone. But the Haitai is not the way. The families in attendance mostly disagree with her assessment, but a few have expressed similar sentiments. I come here every year to mark the day, but I only went downstairs once. Miriam Rivera survived the blast upstairs, only to find out later that her daughter died when the ceiling collapsed on the dining concourse. I saw her, I said goodbye, and I was done. That was hard enough. I lived through this. I don't want to experience it again, even if it is just shades and shadows. Why do we have to call up the past? Just commemorate it. Since the third anniversary, members of the sect of Yeshua Haru have protested the high tie. Standing silently outside the station until the ritual is over, they hold signs or wear shirts embroidered with the ancient sign for Ba. By forcing the Ba back into this world, we're denying these people the ability to pass through the door into the next life.
Amen.
The group echoes an old belief that the ghosts the ritual invokes aren't just shades, but the actual Ba of the deceased. Out of respect for the dead, they refuse to interfere with the high tie, but they petition the clerics to refuse the request each year. We don't know. We can't know the effect this has on the dead. Are we making them relive the pain and fear and anguish of dying all over again? The father and son wait for them on the other side of the door. How long are these people going to keep the dead from the next life? I mean, no one can undo what was done. What's the point in reliving it?
Yeah.
Sadana has heard all these objections before, but dismisses them. They completely misinterpret the fundamentals of the high tie. The Ba can travel back and forth, yes, but it's the Sheyut we invoke, an imprint left on this world, nothing more. She also contends that closure can never come until the source of the victim's pain is eliminated. Years after the coordinated bombings in 12 cities, Kemet has still never brought Avrigny to justice. Pays d'Ambelno still operates, though in a weakened state, and the military is on the eve of invading another Gaelic country accused of providing aid to the organization. For some families, it isn't about global concerns, but about their own personal grief. Nadie Tanafriti leans against Sedana for support as she rings the sixth bell on the subway platform where bomber number 6, a transit employee, delivered the final blow. My son struggled to hang on to life. Claudius crawled into a nook and tried to stop the bleeding. But he was alone, and the shrapnel cut him too deep, and his life just slipped away. Before he died, he said, "I'm sorry, Mom, I love you." I had a lip reader come the year after I finally found him. He said it over and over to make sure I'd be able to see and understand. How can I not come every year and be witness to that? He needed me to know. There was a young lady who died right over there, trapped under these big chunks of... I'm sorry. It breaks my heart, because I saw her for 2 or 3 years, then she just faded. There was no one here to invoke her, to bring her back and remember her. So now she's gone, maybe forgotten, forever. Others who died have also faded from the ritual over the years, most notably the bombers themselves, who were often the target of fruitless attacks by grieving survivors. All but one are gone from the square now. Only bomber number 2 remains. His widow, Deirdre, stands in front of the place where he appears each year, flanked by 3 police officers. She never speaks, and has never taken part in reading the names or ringing the bells. In earlier years, some families and survivors protested her right to take part in the high tie, making well-publicized threats. Sedana has advocated on her behalf since the beginning, finally bringing about an uneasy peace between the mourners. Deirdre's grief is private, some families concede, and of a different measure than theirs. Each year she stands close enough to see into her husband's eyes, to mark the moment when he went from partner and father to martyr and murderer. When asked 6 years ago why she came, she said she was looking for a way to forgive him. And she'll keep attending, she says, until that forgiveness comes. Sylvia Lowley, National Radio News.
You've been listening to Until Forgiveness Comes, read for you by the author K. Tempest Bradford. And this is not National Radio News. This is WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored Pacifico Radio, broadcasting at 99.5 FM. Well done.
Thank you.
And, I say that again.
Thank you.
Okay, see, I brought your pie, and I only screwed up at least once in the effects. When we finally do the radio drama, Reggie Johnson here at BAI knows exactly how it's going to get engineered, and he is going to do a bang-up job, and we're going to produce it just like one would do an NPR piece. So it's going to give it that verisimilitude. But nice reading.
Thank you.
Good differentiation on the characters and all that. you want to ask people?
Yeah, let's get some callers.
Yeah. If you would like to call up and react to the stories and, more importantly, to the issues that the story raises, the telephone number here at WBAI is 212-209-2900. And, let's open the doors. Let's get some air into this freaking room. And while you do that, I'm actually going to ask you the first question, although I see calls are already coming in. And of course, in the meantime, I forgot what it was. The story itself raises as many questions as it answers, as a good NPR piece would, you know, with the, is it just to keep, you know, this holographic thing happening over and over? Are people unable to go past the event? And that's actually the part that fascinates me, is the recreation. And you know what I was thinking of? I mean, beforehand, it would have been the 10th anniversary itself.
Right.
Where on TV, when Charles Strozier came in after Rick's story on Sunday, and we're coming in, he looks up at the TV and he says, oh, they're still doing the names.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, I thought of your story, even with, you know, Rick's piece being broadcast at that moment. I thought of your story. And the other thing that I thought of, I don't remember exactly what catastrophe it was, but there was a Japanese catastrophe of people drowned at sea. It might have even been a U.S.-caused event. It was an old event. And they go out on the ocean.
Mm-hmm.
To the location and ring bells and talk about, read the names of when each person may have drowned.
Oh, my.
Yeah. And I heard about that about a year ago.
Mm-hmm.
And this is something that they've done for a couple of years now. And again, that made me think of your story. And thinking, oh, my God, they're doing exactly what Tempest wrote about.
Well, you know, I'm very fascinated by people's reactions to large-scale tragedies. Particularly, one of the reasons is because my birthday happens to be April 19th, and a lot of terrible things seem to happen on or about April 19th. So every year I wake up on my birthday, wow, another year older, oh, tragedy. So
when you get to my age, it's a tragedy, let me tell you.
But for instance, the Oklahoma City bombing that happened on April 19th.
Mm.
And so I ended up just watching a lot of coverage of that. And it's one of those things where before September 11th, and even now to some extent, people don't pay as much attention to the Oklahoma City bombing.
That's right.
Except the people who live in Oklahoma City who lost family members and friends and whatnot. Like, it's still a very present thing in their lives.
And darn it, that was people are going to be upset at me. That was our own tragedy. That was an American who killed everybody there.
And
so.
And it's one of those things where, you know, most people aren't paying attention to that particular tragedy, but I pay attention to it simply because it happened to occur on my birthday, and so it's something that I'm always thinking about on that day.
Yeah, I couldn't have told you the date.
Yeah, exactly.
It's in my consciousness. It's always there, especially because I remember the news. I love watching the news when these things happen, not because of the event, but because of the misinformation that comes through the media.
Right.
Obviously this was an Arab-based attack. Oh, no, it was these people and those people, and it was homegrown gang.
Right.
It was pure red-blooded American spilling American red blood.
Right.
But it took them so long to come to that conclusion. And the stories of the arrest of a terrorist group and this, I mean, all this stuff that had been announced then. Mm-hmm. So I remember it, but I, you know, sad to say, I cannot tell you how many people, how many souls were lost that day.
Mm-hmm.
Nor did I recall that it was April 19th.
Yes. So, you know, there's that that's always been in my background. And then, as I was saying before, the story was pretty much directly inspired by listening to an NPR report about the ceremony at Ground Zero on 9/11 in 2004, 2005.
Might have even been Adler, Margot
yes,
Adler.
Yes, yes. And so because I avoided all coverage of 9/11 as much as possible in the years leading up to that, but then around, you know, 2004, 2005, I thought, okay, it's been a few years. I'm fine. I don't need to worry about this. I can listen to the radio on September 11th and it'll be fine. And it was not fine. And a lot of stuff came bubbling up out of my subconscious. But the thing that struck me the most when listening to the NPR report about what was going on, you know, with this ceremony of how people were, you know, reading the names of all the people who died and ringing a bell to mark when the first plane hit and the second plane hit and the first tower collapsed and the second tower collapsed. It just struck me as very much like they were attempting to recreate these moments. Mm. And that doesn't strike me as being particularly healthy, but, you know, there are so many ways that people deal with grief and,
well, this is what Strozier, I mean, this is why I also want him to mm-hmm. talk about this story as he did about Rick's.
Mm-hmm.
Janet Coleman turned me on to him, as it were, and oh my God, is he brilliant on this topic and on the topic of dealing with grief after apocalypses, which is, after mm-hmm. all, what this was.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he was telling on Sunday. Now, you see, after the broadcast, we recorded, I brought him and Rick into another studio, and we recorded another 45 minutes of discussion between the two of them. So I don't remember what was broadcast and what wasn't. But one of the things that he pointed out were that people didn't know how many people died. The numbers were so exaggerated.
Mm-hmm.
20,000 people dead, 10,000 people dead. People didn't know if the number of people dead for 2 days after was between 20,000 and all that. And when it turned out the number was about 3,000,
mm-hmm.
people started underplaying that, you know, as if the greater the catastrophe, the better to, I don't know, scream vengeance about or something like
right.
that. It was not healthy.
Right. And Americans have, you know, their particular ways of dealing with large-scale tragedy and grief, but one of the, you know, it just struck me how they had essentially created a ritual, you know, a fairly religious ritual that didn't have a specific, you know, denomination attached to it, but they created a religious ritual for this event, and it continues. You know, I didn't watch any of the coverage of what went on Monday or Sunday.
Sunday.
But
yeah.
But Monday when
I would not have had I not been
right.
a part of
but
it.
But Sunday, but Monday.
And again, let me thank the powers that be at WBAI for having, if I may say, the foresight for putting arts programming on
right.
the air at a point when national attention was focused on us.
Right.
You know, for putting a speculative fiction story on the air that morning. May I thank again the powers that be here at WBAI and Janet Coleman and David Dozer for securing that airtime.
Mm-hmm.
That was a lovely, wonderful move. It wasn't the usual.
Right. But again, like how else do people deal with tragedy? I mean, that's one way, by creating these rituals, but another way is by exploring it through the lens of fiction. You know, there have been many stories that have been written about directly about 9/11, and it's in, you know, they're an important part of the conversation too, whether or not they are stories about their, you know, quote real stories. You know, fiction is a way to process tragedy as well.
But the one that you wrote particularly affects me because it is not of this group versus that group. We're never really told what this futuristic, horrific, apocalyptic event is. It attacks largely these people in one part of the world, and you know, it's not to me, I should talk, you're right here, but but it's not to me that the country, the people were chosen for a political point. It could have been anybody.
Yeah, it was
to make the point.
Right, right. It was basically just, you know, these people feel wronged by the dominant culture in the world that I created. And the dominant culture in the world I created is based on ancient Egyptian culture. And
right.
So, and yeah, and that came about specifically because when I said, okay, I want to write a story about a ritual where people literally like bring back the dead to life just for those few moments so they can relive the most horrible moment in their lives. You know, what culture would bring that about? And I feel like...
And what technology, what people would use that technology
right.
to make that moment happen. And that, to me, Ms. Bradford here is a technology writer.
I am.
So that, for me, is part of the horror of the story, is that, oh, look what we can do. You know, this was, you know, Google recreations here.
Yeah.
Or something along those lines.
Yeah. So I figured that the Egyptians had Egyptian culture been the dominant culture and come forward, I feel like the Egyptians would have been the most likely candidate to create something of this nature.
And we did sort of create it on Sunday, didn't we?
Yeah.
There was a lot of real-time stuff going on. I didn't pay much attention to it, but I was in this room, this broadcast room, at the time, looking up at a TV monitor and watching it.
Mm-hmm.
And while Rick's story was on the air, I was also thinking of your story. It was a very weird juxtaposition.
Mm-hmm.
And let me, by the way, tell listeners that at some point you should go to archive.wbai.org and go to Sunday, September 11th, and at 11 o'clock on the there is a link for a show called The Next Hour, and you can download, not just stream, but download that particular broadcast and listen to it, although there will be a future version. No sooner than 1:15 in the morning, here at WBAI, the station manager comes up to me and says, I want that premium. Meaning that he wants that thing. And Tempest, you can assert...
Indeed, that is how it happened.
To the factuality of it. That you know, and I just keep screaming at the station manager, how do you intend to run this place if you're here till 1:15 every morning?
Yeah, go to bed, dude.
No, well, really, really. You know, it's like, you got to run this place, and he's like this one-person show.
Yeah.
Not healthy. We need to keep these people healthy or they will make unhealthy decisions. Speaking of unhealthy decisions, this is WBAI in New York City. The program's Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. And you can call up at 212-209-2900 to speak with Kay Tempest Bradford about her work, specifically here, the story, Until Forgiveness Comes. Good morning, you're on the radio.
Yes, good morning, everyone.
Good morning, Monroe.
Yes,
you're on a slim
topic, but the point is, the story was about this train station, how should I say, detonations, and it was caught on some videos, and then the people see their beloveds, in their last moments.
It's not exactly video, no.
There's only one video recording mentioned in the story, but...
Oh, but I mean, it was recorded somehow, and then they...
Using a future technology.
I see. And then they see their people, their, fathers, mothers, and family members, and others, in their last moments, alive. But I was thinking that before I remembered what the story was about, because I think I heard it when you did that program with that literary group. But the point is,
actually,
that,
I was wrong about that. Tempest was here, as she is this morning, as the guest. So.
Right, right, right. And I love those programs where they talk about how to.
We're going to be doing another one. We're going to record it. Because, unfortunately, those people can't be here on a Wednesday night, Thursday morning for a very stupid,
oh, yeah, sure, right.
A very shallow reason. They have to work the next day.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is we're going to record one of those and then broadcast
it here. Yeah, I see your point. I hadn't been thinking about that aspect. But changing time is quite a, you know, ordeal for some people.
It's a very, very different hour of life than it was.
Yeah, you have my sympathies, Jim.
Thank you.
And everyone.
Write the PD.
But the point I wanted to make about 911, the actuality of it, is I was at work and I heard Paul DiRienzo say a plane has flown into the one of the World Trade Tower buildings. And, of course, I had seen small planes flying about the city, so my first thought was, well, it's probably either a Piper Cub or a Cessna or a Learjet, you know, that some pilot had trouble with the mechanism or was, shall we say, drunken or whatever, on drugs.
Yeah, it made me think of the Empire State Building in 1940.
Right, but that was sort of a military plane, wasn't it?
And I don't recall, Tony.
Yeah, it was a stormy night.
The plane flew into the Empire State Building.
Yeah.
Do you remember what kind of a plane that was? Do you have any?
It was a military plane.
It was a military plane.
Yeah.
Well, you were right, Monroe.
Oh, Jim. You know, we had that earthquake recently. I was lying in my bathtub, Tempest, and the walls were shaking, and the hangers on my shower curtain were jiggling back and forth. And at first I thought somebody dropped something from the apartment above, and then I realized it couldn't have been that because it kept on and on.
Okay, let's get back to
the
story,
Monroe.
Well,
I remember the earthquake that you announced on your 6 o'clock show. That's why bring it up.
I was live on the air of the previous earthquake.
Right, right. And,
I was reading a story when it happened.
What year was that, Jim?
I don't know.
Well, you don't remember yourself?
I don't remember. All I remember is that the earth moved.
I heard a loud noise.
We were at 505 8th Avenue. There was a very loud noise because behind the control room were people's individual lockers. Used to have lockers, and they sort of pitched forward and back and slammed against the control room door. That's what, yes, it was very funny, Tony. You laugh, and our engineer, ladies and gentlemen, and I'm in the middle of reading a short story on the air when that happened, and I thought, well, that was weird. I just felt queasy because it's a room without outer windows. I had no idea. And then as I was reading the story, they used to have the news tickers. Remember news tickers?
Yeah.
They used to have the news tickers in the room right across from the control room.
Mm-hmm.
I have another anecdote about that, but I won't do it now. Other than shortly after, and I thank God I was near the end of the story, all the tickers started going off, five gongs, which meant local disaster.
Mm-hmm.
Or something like that. And that's when I knew it was an earthquake.
So then let me just go on a moment more. So then
I told you not to digress
than I did. It became clear that this was a heavy-duty airliner and that it must have been some sort of an attack. Immediately I was thinking of the Russian attitude that they, of communism, that they had to have the violent overthrow of the capitalist system.
Mm-hmm.
And so immediately I thought of, well, my God, did Russia do this? And we had the Cold War, as Jim, I may be younger, but I'm sure Jim remembers the Cold War. I mean, this is, and the domino theory that we had to try to suppress Asian nations so that communism wouldn't spread. I mean, it's so absurd because...
So other countries wouldn't fall to communism.
Yeah,
that was the domino theory.
Unions, the American...
But let's rewind and get back to the story.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, how to say it? It's really, I don't know how to say it, that the story is the story that was written, but where can we go with it? If you want someone else on the air, Jim, I'll be glad to get off. But
yeah, sure, shortly. I've got other calls coming
in. Yeah. But I just want to say that, and then after it, the second plane hit, I said, my God, what kind of an intelligence service do we have? You know, all the FBI, the CIA, the Secret Service.
The NSA, the largest of them all.
The FAA, all these different organizations, and this was allowed to happen if it was the action of some affiliated individual?
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, but it is a little off topic at
this
moment.
All right, listen, Jim.
I agree with you.
Yeah, well, I mean, the point I'm trying to make is that we live in this world of such transiency, actually.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I worked on Blade Runner when we did the movie posters. And
that's right.
And the world that was envisioned, you know, you remember how they walked in the streets there?
Well, you can, you know, when Ridley Scott makes the next Blade Runner movie, which he is going to be
doing. Out of the recut parts of the movie that they wouldn't let him put on the DVD.
No, it's not a remake. It's another movie in that universe written and directed by Ridley Scott.
Wow.
Okay, that's what's
going
on. And the only reason Ridley Scott, by the way, is doing that is in order to get Matt and I to argue on the air.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, okay.
Well, it was a very good movie, but you're entrenched in the, what's his name, Dick's.
No, it's not just that I prefer Dick's version.
Yes.
And I love the play. It's that, and we're not going to get into this now. I criticize the movie on its own grounds.
I don't want to lose.
Okay, thank you. Take care. Bye bye. Yeah, we'll do, I'll get Matt Kressel back on, and Edward Einhorn, who wrote and directed Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep off Broadway, which I hope gets another run. Did you see that, Tempest?
I did not see it, but I heard it was great.
It was really great. And, you know, Matt and I utterly agreed on that. We have, and Edward had a third opinion on the movie. We all have very different views on the film. And I think some of it has to do with, well, when we were born.
Yeah, maybe.
And what was seminal? What, you know, for me, it was 2001, A Space Odyssey, because I was the age when I saw that Matt was
when he saw
Blade Runner.
Yeah.
I think that's critical, no pun intended, to the feeling about it.
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, probably my prejudice against Blade Runner has to do with, you know, loving that book and feeling that there was very little of Philip K. Dick. But, okay, this is another show. Okay, and good morning, WBAI, you're on the air.
Good morning.
Good morning, Robert.
Good morning, Kay Tempest Bradford. I have to tell you, it's very hard not to be emotional after hearing you read that.
Oh, thank you.
Very, very hard. When they pulled us out of class that day, because I was still teaching high school, they pulled us out. And the first number that I was
thought you were teaching college.
No, both. I taught college at night, James.
Ah.
And high school during the day. No rest for the wicked. Anyway, the first number they gave us was 50,000. That's the first number I got, 50,000. And as I'm standing on First Avenue looking south, the acridity, if I can, of the air was just incredible. There were people who were actually choking because the wind that day was literally coming from the south. And it was real literally coming up. And it was a very hot day in September, I remember.
Not that hot. It was temperate. I remember it was a perfect day. It was like 76 degrees with a nice breeze coming through.
Well, you know what, James? Maybe it was because I had to figure out what to do with 35 kids and how to get them home.
Yeah, I mean, that's a lot of the horror of that day.
I mean, they were telling
us
that the subways were closed and everything. Okay, Kay, I want to ask you three questions specifically about
the story. Try Tempest, by the way.
Okay.
Drop the K.
Oh, it isn't K? Tempest. Are you
just
Tempest. Tempest. Okay.
Yeah, the byline is K. Tempest Bradford,
okay,
but the direct
address.
Okay.
Thank you.
I apologize.
That's okay.
We don't want to get on the wrong foot.
You should have known before you tuned in, yes.
First question. The woman anchor, her name was Sylvia Lully.
Sylvia Aloli.
Aloli.
Yes.
Now, I have to ask you, being an NPR junkie, you didn't base that on an actual NPR woman, a news anchor who's very well known, who works out of Rome, did you?
Oh, I think I did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, what it is that I'm a huge NPR news junkie, and I do love Sylvia's voice.
Oh, I do too.
And her reporting. And I, for some reason, in my imagination, I thought that the report that I heard about, you know, the ceremony at Ground Zero was reported by her, but obviously that's probably not the case, because she was probably in Rome, and it was more likely that it was Margot Adler that I heard. But I think just because I do really love Sylvia's reporting so much, and again, her voice, I was thinking of her voice when I was writing the piece.
It's funny you mentioned Margot, because the last time I saw her was in the Providence, Rhode Island bus station. She was headed for the Cape, I was headed for a music camp, and she was on her way to Rome to spend 2 weeks with Sylvia.
To Rome, that's funny.
Yeah, she was. Funny. Now, second question. Egyptian-dominated world, but that will be my third question, but I think you answered part of it. Any particular reason why your perpetrators were Celtic?
Partially because I was thinking of how Europe would be different if Egypt had arisen as the dominant culture, and thinking about, you know,
because is it fair to say that this is an alternate universe, or is it a futuristic?
It's an alternate universe. It's an alternate universe, and I was just thinking about like how Europe would be different. And
so these two ancient cultures,
coming together, and so you know, without Rome there to dominate, like I sort of looked into some of the contested land, and again, like since Rome isn't the one that's marching across, like what kind of cultures would be keeping more of their, you know, original, you know, societies and stuff like that.
So this Celtic group was attempting to not assimilate, but to say split off, say Brittany or the Auvergne or some part of France from the mother country, I guess.
Right. Like basically they wanted sovereignty, and and the dominant culture wasn't giving it to them.
And my third and last question, but I think you answered part of this. What traditions and actual folkloristic rituals, you had to do a lot of investigating for this. I have a feeling you really immersed yourself in Egyptian culture, folklore, and mythology for this.
I did, and actually it wasn't specifically for this. I've been researching Egyptian culture for a long time, because I've been in the midst of writing several books and a play based on Egyptian culture, specifically in the 18th dynasty during the when Akhenaten was pharaoh.
Because you mentioned Nubia. Well,
yes.
That's the old name for the Sudan.
Yes.
And I
yes.
was wondering whether you used Nubian or Sudanese culture.
Not as much for this particular story, although I have done some research.
Ooh, I'd love to hear that from you sometime.
Yeah. Well, someday this book is going to get written.
That would be a whole show in and of itself.
Yeah.
Easily.
Oh, yeah. And someday this book is going to get written.
But I have a question for you, Tempest.
Yes.
At what age, at what point in your life did you get interested? I was fascinated by that stuff as a boy. When other kids were into the rocket ships, I was into the, you know, learning about the Ka and visiting the museums that have all the Egyptian relics. And I haven't done that in almost a month now.
Yeah.
I mean, that doesn't go away, the fascination with the Egyptian dynasties.
I think part of it was because when I was very young, I remember they brought the mummy of Ramses, I think.
Ramses II.
Yes, when they brought him on tour, and I was living in Denver at the time,
my
mother took me to see that, and just became interested in that. But mostly it was in college I became interested in Egyptian culture, because I was writing a play based on Antigone, and then I started reading Emmanuel Velikovsky's Oedipus.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my heavens. Wow.
Do you know that Margot met Velikovsky?
Oh, man.
Oh, my God. I almost met him.
Velikovsky is a very, very interesting man. And I actually, like, my copy of Oedipus and Akhenaten actually has his signature in
it. Have you read the Book of the Dead, Tempest?
I've read some of it, yes. And what I did...
Fascinating piece of literature, I must tell you.
Yes.
The thing about Velikovsky is that this is a guy who's a complete and utter crackpot, except for the fact that they're continually, as time goes on, and they start learning things, they discover that some of the stuff that he stated about cosmology, which was completely fatuous and wrong and blah, 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 is true. And yes, they're learning more that this crackpot was, and along with Fred Hoyle, another crackpot, that some of their science, oh my God,
now,
is quite
accurate. Now, there's one last thing.
Yeah.
I want to share a proverb with you and a saying. And this is actually from the 18th dynasty. I actually verified this because, you know, you hear a lot of things on TV shows, and this was actually courtesy of Babylon 5.
Oh, my God.
James, I tracked this.
Babylon 5, the show that has no idea what Hour of the Wolf is, even though they called episode season 4 Hour of the Wolf.
Yes, I know. Hey, it lasted for 5 years. Four or five years?
Five seasons.
You know, anyway. Anyway,
and they're trying to revive it, too.
They are? Oh, my.
Well, Joe Straczynski is.
Oh, please. Mm. Anyway, let it go the way of the original Battlestar Galactica. Anyway, the proverb that the commander, there was a multi-religious festival or something, and it was like the 10 hours of the dying or something,
mm-hmm.
and he uttered an Egyptian proverb, and I tracked this down through a friend of mine who's an Egyptologist, and I want to say it to you, and it says, may sunlight, warmth, love and joy interpose itself between you and all the hard places you may have to travel, traverse, and go through in life.
Oh, that's really beautiful. Thank you.
That's an 18th
dynasty.
I like
that. That would make a good toast.
That's for you and Barbara too, James.
Okay, thank you. Take care. Bye-bye. And good morning. You're on the radio.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm calling to give thanks for hearing the name Sylvia Pagioti.
You've got it wrong, though.
What?
Well, in the story, it was Aloli.
I know. Well, during the discussion right now.
Well, yeah, yeah.
That's what I'm calling to give thanks for.
Oh, okay.
She brings back wonderful memories at a time right now in my life. Well, I'm going through some personal travail, so it was a great relief to hear that, and I thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye-bye. 212-209-2900 to speak with Tempest Bradford about Until Forgiveness Comes and her other work in general. Good morning. You're on the radio. Hi there.
Hi. I listen to NPR, too, a lot, and I want to get into the production of it, of what you're going to do later on.
Mm-hmm.
When you cut from narrator to the other person, it's going to be a different person, right?
That's going to be a full cast.
Yes. Like, today we just had me and Jim.
And it's actually going to be done NPR style, as if Sylvia is either on the street holding a mic, but at moments she may also be in situ, as it were, with the sound effects. But each person will also have their own sound in the background.
Oh, that's
that,
what
that
I'm
will
to
not
too.
Only will it be a different actor, yeah. but there's going to be different ambience.
Yeah.
For each and every person. So it will be very, very clear to differentiate the characters.
Yes.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, too, about the background sound, too. But I also wanted to know, too, like, you know how, like, NPR, they have the narrator, and then they go to the person that they're interviewing, and then they sometimes they play melancholy kind of music. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, is there going to be any kind of music, or is it going to be a more dramatic or easygoing?
We may have some music. Apparently, Andrea Hairston, who's going to be our director, her partner, Pan Morrigan, has written some music.
Well, I mean, Pan Morrigan is a genius. She
yes.
she invents her own instruments.
She does. And so when I heard that she had written, like, some music for this radio drama, I was very excited because her work is really brilliant. So yes, there is going to be some music. I haven't heard it yet. I don't know what form it will take, but there will be some.
But whether or not it will be part, I'm very conflicted about the whole thing as producer, because on the one hand, I will do anything to get Pan Morgan's music front and center. On the other hand, as an NPR report, it wouldn't have long musical breaks in it. So I'm thinking of, like, beginning and end and maybe a break
mm-hmm.
somewhere in the middle of the telling of the story, like before we go to the crowd
on the square or something like that. There could be like, you know, 2 to 3 minutes of music there.
Mm-hmm. Well, sometimes they do that too, or sometimes they play in the background of the character, but then that will cancel out the sound effects.
But remember, it's an alternate universe.
Okay, yeah.
So we can do it anyway. We darn well please. That's so if we want more music, we're going to put in more music and let NPR go not hang itself. They're good. let NPR say, hey, you didn't imitate us. That's right.
No, that's true. But no, very, very good work. And it did remind me of that kind of thing since I listened to it in Diane Reigns and stuff like that. In the morning and stuff like that. So it really did put me there while I was working.
Oh, well, thank you very much.
Thanks so much. Okay, take care. Have a good morning. Well, that even our crank callers were great. But you too can be a crank caller or a good one at 212-209-2900 to talk to Tempest Bradford. Good morning. You're on the radio. Yellow.
Hello.
Hi, how are you?
Hi, how are you?
I'm so glad to hear a woman's voice. Okay.
I want to ask that young lady a question.
You're on the air with her, so you don't have to say that. Young lady, you can say Tempest.
Okay. Anyway, I was watching Channel 13 about a year, maybe 2 years ago, and it was coming from Egypt. There was these two white guys. They were, I forget the name you call them, but they was finding these treasures in these caves, and they found this statue of a black woman. She was a young woman, and they showed it on Channel 13, and he was calling his friend. His friend was digging over in another hill, and he said, come here. He said, you got to see this. He said, this is the most beautiful woman I have ever seen in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And you could tell she was a black woman. She had a black nose, but it was a nice, pretty shaped black nose. She had this beautiful shaped head, and she had this long, pretty neck.
Mm-hmm.
And you know you know how Channel 13 show things over and over and over again.
Yeah.
Oh God.
Never
yes.
showed that again.
Oh really?
Do you remember the name of the show or the series that it was on?
It was on Channel 13, but it was about you call it archaeology, right?
Archaeology, okay. Or Egyptology. Yeah.
Anyway,
I didn't get a chance to see that. Although I think I know the discovery that you're talking about.
Yeah, I know about the discovery.
Oh, you heard about it?
I did hear about it. Yeah, and as I said, I have like a huge interest in Egyptology and ancient Egypt, and yeah, there. A lot of really good work is being done, you know, unearthing more about ancient Egypt and the art of ancient Egypt, and you know,
and Egypt is finally starting to gain ownership over and curatorship over a lot of the Egyptian artifacts. It's a whole other fascinating story. Mm-hmm. I used to work at a science museum, so I'm very interested in this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And you know, not only the artifacts when all the British come in, they say, oh, we found it. It's going into the British Museum. Or, you know.
No.
Well, at least there have been leases since then. And actually, the British economy... the Egyptian economy has gained a little as a result.
Yes.
But there's been more stuff happening, apparently, in whatever is discovered in the Valley of the Kings or whatever now, and displaying it and, you know, how the money goes and who's helping what museums pay for it, which is a major, major issue.
It is a major issue. Do you ever go to... the Metropolitan Museum of Art, or the Brooklyn Museum.
That's where I went about a month ago.
To see their Egypt collections, because they're really wonderful. And my favorite thing in the Met, in their Egypt collection, there's a specific, it's all arranged by dynasty. So if you go to the area where they have the 18th dynasty, my favorite thing in there is this little medallion, and it's not very big. It's, I want to say, 3 inches wide and maybe 2 inches tall. It's about the size of a business card, and it's a carved medallion of an Egyptian queen. Her name is Tiya, and she's been carved as a sphinx. And it's kind of rare to see a queen carved as a sphinx. Usually it's the pharaoh. But she is
people have been thinking about, was the Sphinx ever a woman?
Right, right. But just at this particular period, you know, at this in these later dynasties, it's more unusual to see a queen as a Sphinx than it is to see a pharaoh as a Sphinx. And so she's depicted as a Sphinx, like, stomping on her enemies and being awesome and brilliant. And I just love that little medallion. And there's also, you know, you're talking about how that statue and how beautiful she was. There is a head of Queen Tia, and I don't know what it's made of. And the Met usually has it, although they don't always have it out. And it's in a special section called the Amarna period. And that's like right next to where they keep the 18th dynasty stuff, because the Amarna period happened right at the end of the 18th dynasty. And she is just a beautiful, fierce woman, and you can tell that she has, you know, like, she's a mixed person. She's mixed African, Egyptian, and also, I guess that right now the area where she came from is right now called Iran, and so she's of mixed descent from a lot of Persians. Yeah, there we go. Yeah. She's mixed Persian, mixed African Egyptian, and she is just a fierce, beautiful looking woman. And there are a lot of busts of her and her granddaughters, who are also like really beautiful African women. So it's I love looking at the actual statuary of people, particularly in the Amarna period, because there was this movement to make everybody look a little more natural as opposed to the very stylistic, you know, idealized version of people that we find in other Egyptian art. So, yeah. So if you haven't seen that, I definitely suggest.
Now what museum you said it is?
This is in the Metropolitan Museum.
Okay.
In Manhattan. So
and also in Brooklyn, I strongly, strongly, strongly recommend the Brooklyn Museum, as
they
Penta
have
said.
An excellent Egyptian
collection
as well.
And not only that, right now they also have a Vishnu exhibit, which is, I mean, so fascinating. And you can go there, and then after you see that, you can watch the movie Sita Sings the Blues, which I tell everybody to go watch anyway. Mm-hmm.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Have a great morning.
You too. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye-bye. It's, you know, women, I don't know why it's this, like, you know, who puts their foot forward or whatever, but it's not, I often have to ask women. And the moment I ask, I get the calls, mm-hmm. right? But otherwise, it's just guys who have to be heard, you know? and if you are a woman who needs to be heard, or a guy who has to be heard, you can call up and speak to Tempest Bradford at 212-209-2900. Listener is here! He hasn't been here, I mean, the last few weeks it's been, you know, guest star of the week, Hamdi Selassie, and last week was Ali Ahmed. Ooh, did I say it right for a change? Maybe I did.
Maybe.
Yeah. I mean, I try to say a once was frequent guest in this show, Saladin Ahmed. You see, I can't do it. I can't do it. You know, Barbara Nimri Aziz here of WBAI, I would say it, and she would go, no, you have to aspirate on the H. You know, it's a Semitic language.
I just call him S-Dog.
There you go.
I just avoid S-Dog.
Somehow I don't think I could get away with that. Father of twins.
S-Dog, father of twins.
Yeah, exactly. Or something like that. His first novel
is
coming out.
Is fantastic.
Oh, you've read it?
Mm-hmm.
Mm, lucky you.
I've read a lot
of
stuff.
Read
a lot of stuff that other people have read.
He was in your writer's group.
He was
in Altered Fluid for only a brief period.
Yeah, well, technically he is still part of Altered Fluid. He is just a member in, not hiatus, but he's...
A member in waiting.
A member in waiting. You know, he's always welcome to
critique
stuff with us.
Yeah, if he comes back, he's in Detroit now.
Yeah.
I'm going to have to figure out when his book comes out. He's going to be on the show. I don't know how. I mean, he left New York without doing a show, which was not the contract between us.
Yeah, he left New York
about a month earlier than he thought he was going to.
Yes, but he is
having to do with apartment availability and stuff.
Yes, but with Altered Fluid, we're Skyping people in. We have people in Hawaii, in Philadelphia, in Latvia,
That's right. In Detroit. That's right, Thomas,
so
in Latvia.
We're bringing people in via technology. We're Skyping them in or Uvoing them in.
But it's not really the same, is it? Use Uvo? We'll talk about that off
the air. But it's not exactly the same as having somebody in a room, but
there's not quite the same rapport.
But you still get a lot out of it as a writer.
No, you do. I cannot believe that I did not put in my calendar the day that we're going to be recording.
Sometime in the next couple of weeks.
It is in the next couple of weeks, and that's why I can't believe it's on my calendar. But let me explain. Altered Fluid on the old Hour of the original, well, actually the second hour, because the original Hour of the Wolf was Margot Adler.
Mm-hmm.
But the second Hour of the Wolf, my Hour of the Wolf, we would have Altered Fluid, this writer's group consisting of, what, about 10 people?
Between 10 and 15.
Between 10 and 15 people. Depending. One person will read a story, and then it will be critiqued positively and negatively by members of the group on a timer. Each writer's mm-hmm. group has a different way of handling how they do it. Altered Fluid has rather, I wouldn't want to say regimented, but rather coordinated way.
Yes, we do Milford Rules. So it's very similar to Clarion, where you get a certain number of minutes for your critique, but you're supposed
Clarion
to also...
Clarion is a science fiction writer's workshop.
That's right. And so you're supposed to have written your crit down anyway, so whatever you don't get to in the spoken portion, you can hand your crit off to the person whose story is being
So
critiqued.
On Saturday mornings it was fine, because people could then collapse after the show.
That's right.
But we on did. This Thursday morning show, we can't get away with that.
Right.
So many
of us have day jobs, unlike myself.
Yeah, come in, Lister. Don't tiptoe around. He's Barge
tip-toeing.
On in.
He's tiptoeing.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. He's bringing air with him.
Because it's hot in here.
Yes, and it's, should I say it? It's not that much hotter with this guy in the room. Anyway. The point is that we're going to record one of the sessions of Altered Fluid,
mm-hmm.
as we used to do it live on the show. And then we will broadcast it with, who is reading this time?
You know what? I have forgotten. It has completely gone out of my head.
David told me in email. Yeah. Evil David told me.
But I know that I'm going to have a lot of interesting things to say.
Okay. And then we will broadcast that critique. And then those who can be awake on the Thursday morning
mm-hmm.
will take phone calls
yes.
in that time. We don't yet know whether it's a 90-minute show or a 3-hour show. It depends on how the taping goes.
Right.
It may turn out to be a 3-hour show.
You could just go all night.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Well, actually, it would be starting earlier be the idea. Mr. Knight is Lister is generous as well, but the idea would be to start like at midnight, you know. It's good to see you back, sir.
Thank you.
Yeah, not that the people you had substituting weren't good, and I was so happy to see Hopday. I haven't seen him since my old time slot, you know, and he is like too cool. And last week was great with Ahmed.
Thanks.
You know, so where were you?
I almost got arrested in North Carolina, but I was running in the mood on the beach, a place called Moore City, North Carolina, on the Barrier Island. So I was supposed to be on Ocracoke Island because my mother died on the beach 2 years ago.
Oh,
no.
Yeah. It's a happy time. It's okay. But they said they didn't want any visitors on, so I was stuck on the beach of Moore City.
But it probably had more to do with the nudity.
Well, you know, they accused me.
I hope everybody on the radio can see this, by the way.
They accused me of not having on pants. I mean, you know, I saw a sign.
I accuse you of that from the first show I did here.
I saw
Rick Bowes was, you made his day.
You know, but it was an interesting experience. I saw a sign in the supermarket that says the health department states that you must have a pair of shoes on and a shirt.
So, okay.
Said pants, right?
Right. And really,
so you thought that was all optional?
Who needs those? Yeah. Mm-mm. Optional.
And the police asked me what I have underneath there. I said, just finished swimming. You know, luckily I didn't tell him I was from New York City. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Give him any bright ideas, right?
Yes, I know this just brought to mind a story that Chris Barzak told me about New York, but I will tell that off the air.
Mm.
But the names involved are real cool.
The FCC will be
sad. Well, it's got nothing to do with the FCC. It actually has to do with rocking the skiffy world, the world of science fiction people going, he, what, she, what? In New York? Off the air. Off the air only, gang. Unless you contribute huge sums of money to WBAI, and then I'll make up a story that isn't true and tell it to you.
I feel like a $10,000 pledge would be enough to
That would do it, but it has to be credit card. You know, it has to be real.
Yeah.
Exactly.
And Jim, I plan to give 1 million Zimbabwe dollars to your next...
Zimbabwe dollars?
Yes, Zimbabwe dollars. 1 million Zimbabwe dollars.
Okay, I don't even know who's in charge of Zimbabwe now. Is it somebody good, or does Zimbabwe need the economy?
Oh, interesting.
Or is it good to take their money out and not give it? Depends on what despot.
Well, I think they manufacture so much that, you know, they can afford to sell this way, you know.
Okay.
But a million, you know how much that is, right?
Yeah, no, I don't. I would assume it's about a buck. 10,000 lira is almost $20 or something. Yeah.
yeah.
I know that.
Makes Depending on feel that good
sure.
to think that they have lots of dollars.
Big numbers. Big numbers. Zimbabwe dollars, though.
It's good to see both of you.
Likewise.
Good to see you, too.
Stay tuned, everybody, by the way, for Burn Baby Burn Clappers, which comes on the air in, but a scant 9 minutes, which means...
Sounds like a disease. Clappers, you know.
A scant 9 minutes, yeah. Actually, it sounds to me like a cat. But... tell us more, Tempest, about your blog, about what other fiction people can find of yours online, where they can go to read the text of the original story that you wrote the dramatization of, blah, blah, blah.
Okay. My blog is actually at ktempestbradford.com, and K is just the letter K and not spelled out.
Yeah, spell out the whole thing.
It's K-T-E-M-P-E-S-T-B-R-A-D. FORD.com. Also, man, spelling without some stuff in front of me. Okay.
Yeah.
And so, but that's my website, and my blog is there. And you can also reach my Twitter and other social network links via the site. And I have links to all of my stories that currently reside online. And Until Forgiveness Comes is still archived.
Still on Strange
Horizons. And so the link to that is there on the sidebar. I want to make it very easy for everyone to read all of my fiction. I have stories published most recently in the anthology Happily Ever After, which was edited by John Klima.
Great anthology.
Oh, my gosh.
That
anthology is amazing. And it's a huge, thick book full of fairy tale reworkings and retellings and mashups, and includes some of my favorite authors. So there's Neil Gaiman, Holly Black, Gregory Maguire.
Anybody good?
You know, a few people.
Yeah, right.
Genevieve Valentine has a story in there. And then the story that I was so pleased to see, Theodore Goss wrote a story many years ago called A Rose in 12 Petals.
Which he read on this program.
Yes, and I read it when it was originally published in Realms of Fantasy, and that story always, always makes me cry.
I recorded her reading it, actually, at a reader con.
And it's just a beautiful Sleeping Beauty story, and it prompted me to write, I think, what was my second fan letter that I ever wrote to an author, basically saying this story was beautiful and made me cry. And so now I'm in a book with that story. My story in there is called Black Feather, and it's a reprint from the Inner Fictions anthology. That's where it was first printed. You can also hear...
Who edited Inner Fictions?
Inner Fictions was edited by Delia Sherman and Theodore Goss.
Okay. Interfictions.
Interfictions,
not
yes.
Inner Fictions. Okay. That's
Interfictions.
Interfictions.
That
right.
was I was in the first Interfictions anthology. And
all the Interfictions, speaking of Chris Barzak.
Yeah.
Who's now
the editor.
Yeah.
Yes.
One of they always have two editors.
Yes.
And then one gets rotated off, and another one comes on.
Right.
So that there's both continuity and a change every issue.
Yes. And a really great anthology series also, by the way. So you can also hear Black Feather read by Amal El-Motar on Podcastle, and there's a link to that from my bibliography page. Let's see, what else? I was also in the Federation's anthology, edited by John Joseph Adams. I had a very short story in there. And then the other most recent thing that I had published was actually a nonfiction essay on Martha Jones from Doctor Who in the Hugo Award-winning book, Chicks Dig Time Lords, which was super exciting to have.
Which we did a show about here.
We did a show about, yes, and had a really good time. And it's such
and
a wonderful
And the fact
book.
That it won the Hugo just blew me away.
Oh, it was so wonderful.
I still have the problem with that about, hey, you know, guys dig Time Lords too.
Guys do dig Time Lords, but chicks dig them harder.
But I still say, I mean, it was obvious from the start that Riversong was a Time Lord, and it's not settled yet whether she is exactly Rory and Amy's daughter. But I will point out, that, well, my favorite thing, which obviously now can't be, I had the idea, the theory that Riversong was a future doctor.
Yeah.
That she was like, you know, the 17th or 18th doctor or something. I think, still think that would have been way cool.
Yeah, maybe.
Nah. You and I never agree on this stuff.
We never agree on this.
We never agree on good episodes.
Stephen Moffat.
Yeah, you see, and I like Stephen Moffat because for the very reason you dislike him, because he's a wuss.
Yeah.
Which means happy endings and stuff like
that. See,
it's not they will get to bring up a baby.
It's not even happy endings. I'm just like, Stephen Moffat can't write women. I'm going to get in so much trouble. So, actually, let's, you know, if you go to my blog right now, we are actually having a discussion, Davies versus Moffat. You know, just basically letting people hash out who they think is the better showrunner. So you are all invited.
Or which is the showrunner better for who?
Yeah. And so you're all invited to drop by and give your opinion on that subject.
Mm-hmm. I will.
And to read my fiction and to read my nonfiction. And definitely Chick Stick Time Lords is going into a second printing because of our Hugo win. So you
I would hope so. But I want another book.
There are other Dig Time Lords or Chicks Dig Things books coming out. So, yeah, there's
no, but I mean edited by, now I'm blanking on her name.
By Lynn Thomas?
Yes, thank you.
Yes, there are some Lynn Thomas projects coming up, as well as some other projects from that same press.
I mean, Hugo Award winning, and she got a new job and all that. So,
yeah.
You know.
There's going to be stuff. So.
There's going to be stuff.
Yeah.
In the meantime, attentive WBAI listeners will hear you on our air first with Hour of the Wolf, and who knows?
Maybe other things.
Maybe other things.
You know, I could be sitting here talking about smartphones for an hour.
Well, actually we should do that. We should do an Hour of the Wolf just about tech.
Mm.
I would be very happy to do that.
Okay.
In the meantime, stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn Clappers with Lister coming your way in just a couple of moments. So go to ktempestbradford.com for all things Tempest and ourwolf.com, HOURWOLF, for a very retro site, but with lots of information about this show and blogs and Margot Adler and all kinds of stuff.
That's right.
Thank you all for listening. I will be back next week from 1:30 to 3 a.m. In the meantime, take care and enjoy.
You will have to say that I am a fool of theory. I am a fool of theory. Trying to reach my freedom of speech and expressing myself, torching the symbol. No repression, let that be a lesson to those that want suppression of the truth. Put on hold, the bold lose control, so they force obedience. Have you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth? That's off the way I see it while I'm going off berserk. Cause the system works, jerk. My people, the people, all around the pigs work. Tell me I'm wrong, though, that's my right in this writing. The Constitution, yo, that's an illusion. Huh, suckers trying to change and rearrange. They say that I'm free, but they sure have a strange way of showing it. But I'm blowing the cover. The red, white, the blue, but the black for the brother. And I'm the lover of this flag like many others take the same turn like me. They yearn for the flag too. Wake up to the lies, the pigs make up imperialistic swans that I grind into bacon bits. Call the fist, cause I ain't taking shit. I'm not a Nazi or a Cappy or a Farmy, but you want me in prison, cause I'm pissing your tag. Get the flag, I rag it and snag it and drag it and rip it to shreds. Cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy. So just hand me a flag from the fastest and watch me burn that piece of cause the real meaning is what the message must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn.
To radio station WBAI 99.5 FM, 2 minutes after 3 o'clock.
Come on with me, let's take a trip, but this time not on a slave ship. Let's find the people who hate this shit. These are the places we'll hit.
Panama, talking about Peru, Azania, Brixton, Belfast, and forget Korea. Haiti, Iran, Puerto Rico, Colombia, Mexico. Talk about uptown Harlem, New York City, y'all. And Nicaragua, East and South Central LA, California, IA, Miami. Do or die, Bed-Stuy, never ran, never will, Brownsville. Boogie down, South Bronx. Yeah. I'm taking action on the system, thinking they slick, contradicting their own, taking me for a fool. They sent my man Joey to jail and now they got him in. Cause he burned the flag. That's the name of the game. Well, I quit playing. I doubt the suckers want you to hear what I'm saying about this nation. Freedom supposed to be the format, but I step on your flag like it's a floor mat. Maim and mangle, the star spangled. I'm not trying to diss you. I use the flag like toilet tissue to wipe my black ass. What? You think that I'm a jackass? I see a flag and I attack fast with some fire. My desire to burn. What? Betty Ross sold up. The truth I show up about America. America, home of the brave, love the free.
Yeah.
Now hold on, just a mother
99 Central.
Give me freedom of speech in the First Amendment.
Yeah.
So why wanna stole me? When I touch the flag, I'm only doing what you told me.
Hell yeah.
You don't like it, so what? I'm not scared of you.
Yeah.
You
99 Sync of WBAI. Back where I belong, yo. Five minutes after 3 o'clock, Mr. Back, where he belongs, right here at Pacifica Radio, non-commercial, listener-sponsored radio. 99 Cinco, WBAI, Burn Baby Burn. Aptiv Selassie, thanks very much, really do appreciate that. Robert Knight, thanks very much, really do appreciate that. Jim Freund, thanks very much, really appreciate that. Ahmed Ali, Aptiv Selassie, sitting in on Burn Baby Burn right here. Here we go, back.
Struggle goes on.
Bad, bad, bad. It's good to be back from Moore City, North Carolina.
Some say the bird will keep on turning. Dread times are near, and I'm not joking. Are you warning?
Back right here where it belongs, 99 Cinco, WBAI, Burn Baby Bird, Eddie Fitzroy.
My head with every in my side, but he, hey, come, I understand.
Joel Chin will never forget. And we will never forget you, y'all. 99 Cinco. So Lister was down in North Carolina, in Hotel North Carolina, y'all, trying to steal to jail. Robert Knight. It's good to be back from North Carolina, Moore City. Had a good time on the beach. Robert Knight turned me on to Hotel North Carolina, y'all.
And still those voices are calling from far away. You can wake me up in the middle of the night to ask to hear them say, welcome to the Hotel California. We are just prisoners here, here for only vagaries. And in the master's chamber,
let me tell you something. Moore City, North Carolina was no Oka Coke. Almost Oka Coke Island. Missed it. They wouldn't let us on, but we'll try next year again, y'all. 99 Cinco, Eddie Fitzroy.
I had to find the passage back to the place I was before. Well, I've said a night that we are all going to receive. You can take up any time you like, but you can never leave.
My mama always tell me that Babylon is a wicked man, that I must always stay away. Babylon a ballad, Babylon a sinner, Babylon a wicked man, Babylon. Babylon drink rum, Babylon eat pork, ride on dreadlocks, ride on natty dread, ride on Rastaman, ride on. From I was born, my daddy always warned me, Babylon a wicked man, Babylon is no good. Oh, 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 yes. Oh, yes. Listen to me, people. If you don't believe
survivor, and you will see that Babylon a wicked man. Oh yeah, oh yeah, oh yeah, yeah, yeah. The judgment day, when my creator father arrive in this time. Babylon a wicked man, Babylon is no good, Babylon brutalize us, Babylon ill treat my brothers for nothing at all. Always try to hurt us for nothing at all. Run Babylon, run, blood Babylon. Babylon a wicked man. Woy oy, woy oy, woy oy, woy oy, woy oy, woy oy, woy oy. From I was born in this world, my mama always tell me that Babylon is a wicked, 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 Babylon eat pork, ride on dreadlocks, ride on Rastaman, in the Bible. The judgment day.
Lister back on the radio where he belongs, right here at Burn Baby Burn. Ready.
Ready. Ready, aim, fire.
with a monkey. You see that object? You better hit it. Ready, aim, fire. Ready, aim, fire. Practice and discipline is the ultimate key. Along with the key, wisdom and prosperity. Practice and discipline is the ultimate key, yeah. Along with the key, wisdom and prosperity.
When I leave, you will know my name.
Ready, aim, fire.
When I leave, you will know
ready,
my name.
Aim, fire. Fire one, steady your hand. By two, take up a few. By three, squeeze the trigger easy. By four, shoot when you're sure. Ready, aim, fire.
When I leave, you will know my name.
Ready, aim, fire.
When I leave, you will know my name.
Like the nuclear bomb.
99 Sinker List Alive right here, back where he belongs. Thank you very much, Grace Jones, Sinead O'Connor, Obadiah, Obadiah.
Obadiah, Obadiah, Jah Jah sent us here to catch vampire. Obadiah, Obadiah, Jah Jah sent us here to catch vampire. We have the chalice, the light of Jah fire. When I and I catch them vampires, I go set them on fire. Ivan trot up down a Unity Lane, see a dreadlocks running down a Rastaman. Swear that if he catch him, he will kill him dead. The dreadlocks couldn't catch the Rastaman. Obadiah, Obadiah, Jah Jah sent us here to catch vampire. Obadiah, Obadiah, Jah Jah sent us here to catch vampire. We have the chalice to light up Jah fire. When I and I catch them vampire, I go set them on fire. A true Rasta man does not gamble. A true Rasta man does not play card pack. A true Rasta man always humble. Obadiah, Obadiah, Jah Jah sent us here to catch vampire. Obadiah, Obadiah, Jah Jah sent us here to catch vampire. We have the chalice to light up Jah fire. When I catch them vampire, I go set them on fire. Jah sent us here to catch vampire. Obadiah, Obadiah, Jah sent us here to catch vampire. We have the
chalice to light up your fire. When I unite, catch them vampires. When I unite, I go set them on fire. Babylon, I mash up the sea, and they blame it on the Rastaman. Babylon, I mash up the sea, they blame it on the Rastaman. Obadiah, Obadiah,
love this woman.
Jaja sent us here to catch
more. Chukyala, IRA from JA, from the streets of Belfast to the streets of Kiddison. JA, so we do it. Sinn Féin style right here at 99 Sync, a thing we call Burn Baby Burn. We're burned imperialist American flag, the old glory to ashes before 5 o'clock comes, when Al Jazeera Live kicks in right here just for you. Just for you, where you belong. Sinead O'Connor dedicating this to you, y'all. Yeah? 99 Sync, a list is back. Eddie Fitzroy, wicked tune. Hear them tune, y'all. Yeah? 32 minutes after 3.
I check for you once, little girl. I check for you twice, little girl. It seems like you never stays at home, girl. I check you at your home late last night. I thinking everything would be alright. When I didn't see you, I feel uptight, girl. I cheat for you once, little girl. I cheat for you twice, little girl. It seems like you never stays at home, girl.
Yo, you yeah, hear them tune, yeah? I hope you feel me. Tighter, baby, tighter, list is back, yeah?
Come with me tonight. Whoa, girl. Remember when we were in school? We used to sit down together. We used to play together. Say that is the time I always remember. Girl. Oh, girl. Oh, girl, yeah. I love you so, girl. Oh, oh. It seems like you never stays at home, girl. I check you at your home late last night. I thinking everything would be alright. When I didn't see you, I feel uptight, girl. I check for you once, little girl. I check for you twice, little girl.
Yo, this to play is the kind of music to fight against in imperialist America right here at 99 Cinco. That's why we had to call the show Doy. Burn, baby, burn, clap ass. 99 Cinco. Hey, yeah.
Stop you running around.
Eddie Fitzroy. Tata, baby, tata. So we are doing it, yeah.
I cheat for you once, little girl. I cheat for you twice, little girl. It seems like you never stays at home, girl.
73 degrees on the outside, endless summer part 2. Just for you right here. 99 Sync of Pacifica, Pacifica Radio. WBAI. 99 Sync. Thank you very much. Eddie Fitzroy. Right here on Burn Baby Burn, yeah. Lister's hero, right here at 99 Cinco. Tighter, baby. Tighter, baby. Tighter, baby. Tighter, baby. Wet bang to 10. 35 minutes after 3 o'clock.
It's okay in the day. I'm staying busy. Tied up enough so I don't have to wonder where. Got so sick of crying. So just lately, when I catch myself, I do a
content that everyone gets just disappears soon as the sun sets. This fierce in my dreams, seizing my thoughts, he floods me with dread. Something sorrow, he swims in my eyes by the bed. Pour myself over him, moon spilling in, and I wake up. Catches up and I'm breathless. There's this ache in my chest. 'Cause my day is done now. The dark covers me and I cannot run now.
Licking back from the dark.
My blood running cold. I stand before him.
Baby, you're the one. You put your arms around me now, baby, like the circus. look around the sun. Baby, high up on the hill. In the daytime I see the clothes. At night I hear that whippoorwill. Living in the country, baby, living on a hill. In the daytime I hear the crows. At nighttime I hear the whippoorwill.
Yo, Robert Knight, this Taj Mahal is for you. Reminds me of North Carolina, Moorhead City on the beach, yeah. Ocotoke Island on the beach, yeah. Ah, yeah.
I am.
Tighter, baby.
I am.
In the nude.
Baby, just know that I'm in love with you. Baby, I'm satisfied. Tickle to
Melly the Brown and her daughter, Alyssa Brown, and her partner. We had a good time on the beach, didn't we? And I am.
Baby, now, sugar. Yes, I'm. Oh, I'm.
From Taj Mahal to Johnny Osborne, on the right here, burn, baby, burn, baby, burn, the imperialist flag to ashes in true political protest in Baba Vakin style. Yeah,
oh,
yeah.
Satisfied and tickled.
Like McDonald and
baby, just know that
percussions,
Kunga,
Family Man and bass. Larry McDonald hooked up Taj Mahal with Family Man back in the day.
Last
time I saw Taj Mahal, he said, "Lista,
baby, just I know that."
Mr. Marley came to me and begged me to manage him. Damn, I blew it, Lista. Used to, 99 single.
Baby, now I'm satisfied. I am satisfied.
After Celeste, yes, thanks for sitting in. Really appreciated that when I wasn't here, y'all. Guess what? Down in North Carolina, kissed some girl with a cool last night. Oh gosh! Hear them tuna. Love them tuna.
Oh, well, I know, oh, what a kiss can do. Oh gosh! I kissed somebody with a cool last night. And where you get it from? Oh gosh!
On the list, I play them tuna up on the radio. Hear them tuna, 99 single, list back on the radio where he belongs, yeah? Yo, I saw it do it, y'all. In the new tighter, baby. Forget about the sheets. I kissed a girl last night. Damn, felt good though. Hear them tune, y'all. Wicked Lista.
If I wanna kiss you again, I would have kissed you by a gun. Oh yeah, I would be a fool to take a kiss from you. Oh Lord, when I know for what a kiss can do.
Think it's back from the top.
You might be someone who has the flow. If I'm gonna kiss you again,
lick it.
I would have kissed your fireman. Oh child,
lick it, but
can you kiss somebody with a cool last night away you
lick it back from the top.
Oh Lord, but if I'm gonna kiss you again, I would have kissed your fireman.
Lick it back from the top.
Demia tuna, tune, hear them tuna. Yo, sister from another planet, this is for you, y'all.
Bullfrog a drink in my toe. Moon a shine down on a T-Bay road. Bullfrog a drink in my toe.
if I gonna kiss you again.
Hear them tune,
I would have kissed you by your man. Oh gosh, I would be a fool to take a kiss from you.
99 Cinco Lista live on the radio. I shot somebody with a pool last night. Oh gosh, what a kiss can do, yo. 99 Cinco Lista right here just for you. 212-209-2900. Gotta get this one off of the niche, y'all.
The slums of my soul to the
brand new.
Think of a plan, staring at an empty can of Heineken again. And I'm doing what I can to get to where I need to be without a helping hand. Cause I'm a hard working man, and at least this way I can be my own boss no matter what they say. So it's a new day for me, time to move, walk away from agony and be me. Focus on self-mastery to get to that next level when I have to be a little bit more selfish to live happily. Completely disregard the rules of gravity and fly high. Rise and shine, touch the sky right now. Feel so right, worth the try, why not? This man here sees no limits. I mean, I got one life to live. I might as well live it to the fullest.
Lately I was wrong, but deep inside it feels so right. And now I sit here alone, inside it feels so right. Whoa, whoa, I said it really feels so right.
So long I'm brainwashed by the rain, but still look at the bright side, I can't complain. Got more than I need, cause all that I need is a roof over my head and shoes to cover my feet. It's not much, they refuse me cause I'm not Dutch. I fight for equal rights, I never have a held a grudge. To get my residence permit, I had a lot of the judge. And now I spit what the real feel, but I cannot touch. So it's time to take it easy, I cannot rush. I got stories for days, yo, how can I hush my mouth? Keep this shit from coming out when you oppressed for so long. My time is now, so I start from scratch. Combine words that match and feed the ears of hungry listeners with the message attached to each song. I'm only Mike Niff when the beat's on. It feels so right, though I might have been wrong.
Maybe I was wrong, but deep inside it feels so right. And now I sit here alone, inside it feels so right. Whoa, whoa, I said it really feels so right. Whoa, whoa, I said it really feels so right.
Day a new one begins and I'm on my way, so can't stop.
Heard this tune like how you heard the Sinead O'Connor here first. 99 Cinco. So we do it. So we do it. It's good to be back. 49 minutes after 3 o'clock right here. New York, New York, so wicked we had to name it twice, ain't it? What the hell happened in Queens, yeah? 212-209-2900. Talk to me because I missed you, I missed you, I missed you so much. Lister on the radio where he belongs. This is the world's most underrated icon. Yeah, ever. Harry Belafonte.
I say let us put man and a woman together to find out which one is smarter. Some say men, but I say no. The women got the men, they should know, and not me. But the people, they say that the men are leading the women astray. But I say that the women of today smarter than the man in every way. That's right, the woman is smarter. That's right, the woman is smarter. That's right, the woman is smarter. That's right, that's right.
Lick it back.
Ever since the world began, woman was always teaching man. You listen to my bit attentively, I'm going to tell you how she's smarter than he cannot be. But the people, they say that the men are leading the women astray. But I say that the women the strongest man long ago. No one could have beat him, as we all know. And he clashed with Delilah on top of the bed. She told him all the strength was in the hair of his head.
Lincoln Bob from the top to the very last job.
They say that the men are leading the women astray, but I say that the women of today smarter than the man in every way. That's
Lincoln
right,
Bob
the woman is
smarter.
That's right, the woman is
smarter.
That's right, the woman is
smarter.
That's right, that's right. Hey, you meet a girl at a pretty dance, thinking that you would stand a chance. Take her home thinking she's alone, open the door. You find her husband home, not me. But the people, they say that the men are leading the women astray. But I say that the women of today smarter than the man in every way. That's right, the woman.